Stratification from Taylor's book. Chapter's name, Social Class and Social Stratification. One afternoon in a major U.S. city, two women go shopping. They are friends, wealthy, suburban women who shop for leisure. They meet in a gourmet restaurant and eat imported foods while discussing their children's private schools. After lunch, they spend the afternoon in exquisite stores, some of them large, elegant department stores, others intimate boutiques where the staff know them by name. When one of the women stops to use the bathroom in one store, she enters a beautifully furnished room with an upholstered chair, a marble sink with brass faucets, fresh water, flowers on a wooden pedestal, shining mirrors, an ample supply of hand towels, and jars of lotion and soaps. The toilet is in a private stall with solid doors. In the stall there is soft toilet paper and another small vase of flowers. The same day, in a different part of town, another woman goes shopping. She lives on a marginal income earned as a stitcher in a textiles factory. Her daughter badly needs a new pair of shoes because she has grown out of last year's pair. The woman goes to a nearby discount store where she hopes to find a pair of shoes for under $15, but she dreads the experience. She knows her daughter would like other new things, a bathing suit for the summer, a pair of jeans, and a blouse. But this summer, the daughter will have to wear hand-me-downs because medical bills over the winter have depleted the little money left after food and rent. For the mother, shopping is not recreation but a bitter chore, reminding her of the things she is unable to get for her daughter. While this woman is shopping, she too stops to use the bathroom. She enters a vast space with sinks and mirrors lined up on one side of the room and several stalls on the other. The tile floor is gritty and grey. The locks on the stall doors are missing or broken. Some of the overhead lights are burned out, so the room has dark shadows. In the stall, the toilet paper is coarse. When the woman washes her hands, she discovers there is no soap in the metal dispensers. The mirror before her is cracked. She exits quickly, feeling as though she is being watched. Two scenarios, one society. The difference is the mark of a society built upon class inequality. The signs are all around you. Think about the clothing you wear. Are some labels worth more than others? Do others in your group see the same marks of distinction and status in clothing labels? Do some people you know never seem to wear the right labels? Whether it is clothing, bathrooms, schools, homes, or across to healthcare, the effect of class inequality is enormous. Giving privileges and resources to some and leaving others struggling to get by. Great inequality divides society. Nevertheless, most people think that in the United States, equal opportunity exists for all. The tendency is to blame individuals for their own failures or attribute success to individual achievement. Many people think the poor are lazy and do not value work. At the same time, the rich are often admired for their supposed initiative, drive, and motivation. Neither is an accurate portrayal. There are many hard-working individuals who are poor, and rich people have often inherited their wealth rather than earning it themselves. Observing and analyzing class inequality is fundamental to sociological study. What features of society cause different groups to have different opportunities? Why is there such an unequal allocation of society's resources? Sociologists respect individual achievements but have found the greatest cause for the disparities in material success to be the organization of society. Instead of understanding inequality as the result of individual effort, sociologists thus study the social structural origins of inequality. Now, social differentiation and social stratification. All social groups and societies exhibit social differentiation. Status, as we have seen earlier, refers to a socially defined position in a group or society. Social differentiation is the process by which different statuses develop in any group, organization, or society. Think of a sports organization. The players, the owners, the managers, the fans, the cheerleaders, and the sponsors all have a different status within the organization. Together, they constitute a whole social system, one marked by social differentiation. Status differences can become organized into a hierarchical social system. Social stratification is a relatively fixed hierarchical arrangement in society by which groups have different access to resources, power, and perceived social worth. Social stratification is a system of structured social inequality. To use a sports example again, owners control the resources of the team. Players earn high salaries, yet do not control the team resources and have less power than the owners and managers. Sponsors, including individuals and corporations, provide the resources on which the system of stratification rests. Fans provide revenue by purchasing tickets to watch the teams play. Sports are a system of stratification where various groups within a sports organization are hierarchically arranged, with some having more resources and power than others. All societies seem to have a system of social stratification, although they vary in the degree and complexity of stratification. Some societies stratify only along a single dimension, such as age, keeping the stratification system relatively simple. Most contemporary societies are more complex, with many factors interacting to create social strata. In the United States, social stratification is strongly influenced by class, which is in turn influenced by matters such as one's occupation, income, and education, along with race, gender, and other influences such as age, region of residence, ethnicity, and national origin. Now, forms of stratification: state, caste, and class. Stratification systems can be broadly categorized in three types: state systems, caste systems, and class systems. In an state system of stratification, the ownership of property and the exercise of power is monopolized by an elite who have total control over societal resources. Historically, such societies were feudal systems where classes were differentiated into three basic groups: the nobles, the priesthood, and the commoners. Commoners include peasants, usually the largest class group, small merchants, artisans, domestic workers, and traders. The nobles controlled the land and the resources used to cultivate the land, as well as all the resources resulting from peasant labor. State systems of stratification are most common in agricultural societies. Although such societies have been largely supplanted by industrialization, a few societies still exist that have a small but powerful landholding class ruling over a population that works mainly in agricultural production. Unlike the feudal societies of the European Middle Ages, however, contemporary state systems of stratification display the influence of international capitalism. It is not knights who conquered lands in war that comprise the noble class. It is international capitalists or local elites who control the labor of a vast and impoverished group of people, such as in some Latin American societies, where landholding elites maintain a dictatorship over peasants who labor in agricultural fields. In a caste system, one's place in the stratification system is an ascribed status, meaning it is a quality given to an individual by circumstances of birth. The hierarchy of classes is rigid in caste systems and is often preserved through formal law and cultural practices that prevent movement between classes. The system of apartheid, APARTHEID, in South Africa was a stark example of caste system. Under apartheid, the travel, employment, associations, and place of residence of black Africans were severely restricted. Segregation was enforced using a pass system in which blacks in white areas were obliged to account for themselves to white authorities. Interracial marriages were illegal and black Africans were prohibited from voting in 1992. Following world pressure to abolish apartheid, a whites-only referendum overwhelmingly endorsed reform of the apartheid system. Jim Crow segregation in the American South is another example of a caste system. Jim Crow refers to the laws and social practices that governed the segregated relations between blacks and whites in the American South. From the end of slavery until the enforcement of contemporary civil rights protections, black Americans in the South were strictly segregated from whites, attended separate schools and churches, used separate swimming pools and drinking fountains, and were denied the right to vote. Among other restrictions, black people were expected to ride in the back of buses, and while whites referred to blacks only by first name, blacks had to address whites as Mr., Miss., or Mrs. These demeaning social practices defined the group status of black Americans as inferior and secondary to white Americans. In the traditional caste system of India, membership in an Indian caste group was determined by birth. Each group was restricted to certain occupations, and the lowest group, the untouchables, was prohibited from associating with the others. The Brahmins were the highest caste. Nobles, who were considered spiritually and socially superior to all other groups. The term has been transmitted to American culture, where it is used to refer to the old money elite families of New England, the Boston Brahmins. The Indian caste system is no longer mandated, but its effects remain. People retain attitudes about the alleged superiority and inferiority of different groups long after formalized distinctions are eradicated, which is one reason social inequalities and prejudices are so tenacious. In class systems, stratification exists, but one's location and rank can change according to individual achievements. Even though class is still strongly determined by one's social background, in class systems, class is to some degree achieved, that is, earned by the acquisition of resources and power, regardless of one's origins. Class systems are more open than caste systems, because position does not depend strictly on birth. Classes are less rigidly defined than caste, because the divisions are blurred by individuals moving between one class and another. Despite the potential for movement from one class to another, placement in a class system is still highly dependent on one's social background. Ascribed status, that is, according to birth, is not the basis for social stratification in the United States. Yet, the class a person is born into has major consequences for that person's life. One's likelihood of achievement is shaped by patterns of inheritance, access to educational resources, and the financial, political, and social influence of one's family. There is no formal obstacle to movement through the class system. Yet achievement is very much influenced by an individual's class of origin. Now, defining class. In common parlance, class refers to style or sophistication. In sociological use, social class or class is the social structural position groups hold relative to the economic, social, political, and cultural resources of society. Class determines the access different people have to these resources and puts groups in different positions of privilege and disadvantage. Each class has members with similar opportunities and who tend to share a common way of life. Class also includes a cultural component. In that, class shapes language, dress, mannerisms, taste, and other preferences. Class is not just an attribute of individuals, it is a feature of society. The social theorist Max Weber described the consequences of stratification in terms of life chances, meaning the opportunities that people have in common by virtue of belonging to a particular class. Life chances include the opportunity for possessing goods, having an income, and having access to particular jobs. Life chances are also reflected in the equality of everyday life. Whether you dress in the latest style or wear another person's tossed-out clothes, have a vacation in an exclusive resort, take your family to the beach for a week, or have no vacation at all, these life chances are the result of being in a particular class. The sociologist's life chances stem from social structural arrangements. Put simply, class matters. Class standing determines how well one is served by social institutions. Healthcare is particularly inadequate for poor and working class people, who are less likely than others to enjoy private care or have good health insurance, if they have any at all. Class influences access to a high quality education. Critically important because education provides credentials and social networks that pay off over a lifetime. Class is also strongly related to political and social attitudes. Those from higher income brackets are more likely to be Republican than Democrat. Even friendship is influenced by class because friendships arise more frequently within class groups than across them. Whether you can have a certain kind of pet is also a matter of class resources. For some, having a pet means picking up a stray dog who eats cheap dog food or hunts for food scraps. Other people may board their dogs and cats in pet spas, where there are heated beds and massage therapists for the pets, even after the owner dies. Class is a structural phenomenon. It cannot be directly observed. Sociologists cannot isolate and measure social class directly. Therefore, they use other indicators to serve as measures of class. Recall from chapter 2, that an indicator is something that represents a concept. By assessing indicators, you can examine concepts that are too abstract to be measured directly. Prominent indicators of class are income, wealth, education, occupation, and place of residence. These do not define class by themselves, but they are good measures of class standing. We will see that these indicators also tend to be linked. A good income or family wealth can make it possible to afford a house in a prestigious neighborhood and an exclusive education for one's children. In the sociological study of class, income, wealth, and education are indicators that have enormous value in revealing the contours of the class system. How sociologists conceptualize class depends, however, on the theoretical framework they use for understanding the class system, as we will see in the next section. Why is there inequality? Stratification occurs in all societies. Why? This question originates in classical sociology in the works of Karl Marx and Max Weber, theorists whose work continues to inform the analysis of class inequality today. Karl Marx, Class and Capitalism. Karl Marx, 1818 to 1883, provided a complex and profound analysis of the class system under capitalism. Marx's class analysis, developed more than 150 years ago, continues to inform sociological analysis and has been the basis for major world change. Marx was specifically interested in how classes formed within the economic system of capitalism, and he defined classes in terms of their relationship to the means of production, the system by which goods are produced and distributed. In Marx's analysis, two primary classes exist under capitalism: the capitalist class, those who own the means of production, and the working class, those who sell their labor for wages. There are further divisions within the class system. The petty bourgeois and the lumpen proletariat. The petty bourgeois includes small business owners and managers, whom you might think of as middle class. They identify with the interests of the capitalist class, but do not own the means of production. The lumpen proletariat are those who have become unnecessary as workers and have become discarded by the economic system. Today, this would include the homeless and other permanently poor people. Marx thought that with the development of capitalism, the capitalist and the working class would become increasingly antagonistic, referred to as class struggle. A class conflict became more intense. The two classes would become increasingly polarized, with the petty bourgeois deprived of their property and dropping into the working class. His analysis is still reflected in contemporary questions about a growing gap between the haves and the have-nots, with the rich getting richer and everyone else getting worse off, an issue further examined later in this chapter. Much of Marx's analysis boils down to the consequences of a system based on the pursuit of profit. If goods were exchanged at the cost to produce them, no profit would be generated. Capitalist owners want to sell commodities for more than their actual value, more than the cost of production, including material and labors. Capitalists extract profit by keeping the cost of labor down. So Marx saw capitalists profiting via the exploitation of workers. Marx thought that as profit became increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few capitalists, the working class would become increasingly dissatisfied, leading to the working class revolting and overthrowing the rule of the capitalist class. Class conflict between workers and capitalists, he argued, would inevitably lead to revolution. In the 1800s, when Marx was writing, the middle class, that is the petty bourgeois, was small and consisted mostly of small business owners and managers. Marx saw the middle class as dependent on the capitalist class, but also exploited by it, because the middle class did not own the means of production. He saw the middle class as identifying with the interests of the capitalist class, but failing to work in their own best interest, because the bourgeois falsely believe that they benefit from capitalism. He thought that in the long run, the middle class would pay for them their misplaced faith when profits became increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few and more of the middle class dropped into the working class. Not every party of Marx's theory has proved true. He did not foresee the emergence of the large and highly differentiated middle class we have today. Still, his analysis provides a powerful portrayal of the forces of capitalism and the tendency for wealth to belong to a few, while the majority work just to make ends meet. He has also influenced the lives of billions of people under self-proclaimed Marxist systems, created in an attempt to overcome the pitfalls of capitalist society. Max Weber, Class, Status and Party. Max Weber, 1864 to 1920, agreed with Marx that classes were formed around economic interests, and he agreed that material forces, that is economic forces, have a powerful effect on people's lives. But he disagreed with Marx that economic forces are the primary dimension of stratification. Weber saw three dimensions to stratification. Class, the economic dimension. Status or prestige, the cultural and social dimension. Power, the political dimension. Weber defined class as the economic dimension of stratification. This would include such things as income, property, and other financial assets. Weber understood that a class has common economic interests and that economic well-being was the basis for one's life chances. Obviously, a family with an income of $100,000 per year has more access to the resources of a society than a family living on an income of $40,000 per year. But he thought that social stratification was more than a matter of economics because people are also stratified based on their status and how much power they hold. Prestige is the judgment or recognition given to a person or group. Weber uses the term status or prestige to refer to the social dimension of stratification. Weber understood that class distinctions are linked to status distinctions. Those with the most economic resources tend to have the highest status in society. In a community, for example, those with the most status may be those who resided there the longest, even if newcomers arrive with more money. Thus, prestige is related to economic standing, but may be independent of income. Ministers and priests are accorded high prestige, but they do not typically earn high incomes. Power is the political dimension of stratification. It is the capacity to influence groups and individuals even in the face of opposition. Power is also reflected in the ability of a person or group to negotiate their way through social institutions. Again, those with great economic resources have more power to influence others, including the power that wealthy individuals and corporations wield in the political process. Those with great power also are better able to negotiate their way through social institutions. A business executive accused of corporate crime can afford expensive lawyers and may go unpunished, or if found guilty, will likely serve a relatively light sentence in pleasant, minimum security facilities. Compare this to the experience of a poor African American or Latino man wrongly accused of a crime who will not have much power to negotiate his way through the criminal justice system. Weber had a multidimensional view of social stratification because he analyzed the connections between economic, social, and political dimensions of stratification. He pointed out that these different dimensions of stratification are usually related, but not necessarily. A person could be high on one or two dimensions, but low on another. A major drug dealer is an example. High wealth, that is economic dimension, and power, that is political dimension, but low prestige, that is social dimension, at least in the eyes of the mainstream society, even if not in other circles. The point is that stratification does not rest solely on economics. Political power and social judgments are important components of social stratification.